That's fine.
Again.
I end up with this crazy thing.
I'm actually not surprised that Garrett
because it's too small, and I can't figure out how to make it bigger.
Good afternoon, everyone. Let's go ahead and start. The Vice Chair Hicks is on his way down from Judiciary Committee, but while we're waiting for him, we can start with adoption of committee rules. Open an organizational meeting for purposes of adopting committee rules. Madam Vice Chair, motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 4th, 2013.
Okay, thank you. Vice Chair Hoyle moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 4th, 2013. Is there any discussion? Ms. Seiler, anything we need to know about the rules?
I just want to make sure you notice that there is a new rule, number 17, regarding the announcement of actual or potential conflicts of interest, and that if you announce a potential conflict of interest during committee, a written statement must be provided with committee staff when the bill is dropped. That is the only new rule from previous sessions.
Thank you very much. Is there any discussion on the motion to adopt the proposed committee rules? Any objections? Motion passes and the rules are adopted. Why don't we take a minute to introduce our committee members briefly before we start with our two agenda items. Welcome everyone to Rules Committee, returning members, new members. Why don't we just quickly have members introduce themselves for the record, starting to my far right.
Okay. Bill Kennemer, representative from Canby and Environments.
State Representative Paul Holby from House District 8 and Eugene, Notai, Walton, Lorraine, Benita. It's a beautiful country down there with lots of wineries. And happy to be back on Rules. Actually was Vice Chair of Rules in 2005 and again in 2011? No, 9.
Years.
Yeah, so enjoy the committee. Looking forward to tackling some issues.
Representative Bob Jensen, House District 58. That's the northeastern corner of the state of Oregon. Not so proud home of most of the predators called wolves in the state of Oregon.
I think he's going after the wolves.
Representative Val Hoyle, House District 14, West Eugene, and Junction City Vice Chair. And no matter how nice you are, you cannot have the seat.
Chris Garrett from Lake Oswego, and I also represent part of Southwest Portland.
And Wally Hicks from Josephine County.
Phil Barnhart, Central Inn in Linn Counties.
Vicki Berger, Salem, West Salem, Monmouth, and Independence.
Michael Dembrow, I represent House District 45. That's Northeast Portland, out to Park Rose, and it includes Oregon's only city within a city, and that's the city of Maywood Park.
Population?
Population about 800.
Well, thank you, everybody. Members, welcome to the Rules Committee. One scheduling note, which I hope will go over acceptably to all of you, which is I'd like to avoid Friday 3 o'clock meetings to the extent possible. I think we can run this committee efficiently enough to do that. Obviously, it depends on workload, but I know we have some members who travel home some distance for the weekend, so I'd like to avoid Friday at 3. So let's try and manage our meetings to achieve that. Why don't we quickly do our one bill that's on the agenda, open a public hearing on House Bill 2148, and do we have...
I can just quickly review it.
Yes,
if you'd like.
Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2148 corrects grammar and punctuation errors in statute, conforms language to existing statute and legislative style, deletes obsolete statutory references, there's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
I'm Ted Reutlinger. I'm the Chief Deputy Legislative Counsel. I congratulate you for dealing with the most exciting bill of the session on the first day. What this is a routine bill. It's a revisor's bill. Legislative Council produces this every session. The goal of this bill is simply to correct errors, omissions, update references, remove obsolete provisions that we find in the statutes as we draft and edit the statutes. The other main goal of this bill is not to make any substantive changes in the law. You can see Section 1 of the bill states very clearly that it's the policy of the legislature in this bill not to alter the legislative intent or purpose of the statutory sections affected. And so our goal here is simply to fix mistakes and not do anything else substantive in the bill. Also, the title to this bill is Correction to Erroneous Material in Oregon Law, which would not accommodate any substantive amendments to this bill. The other unique thing about this bill is after each section of the bill, there's a note that tells you exactly what is happening in that section and what we have fixed or changed. And with that, I'll stop talking and answer any questions that you have.
I'm sure there are a lot of questions on this bill. Members?
Is it correct?
Sorry, as a new member, Mr. Chairman, but I just, I haven't had the opportunity to proofread every jot and tittle.
Would you like to carry it over so you can read it? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, as someone who has had experience with the revisor's bill, it is a lot of work, Ted. Thank you for your efforts to clean up, because it is a necessary effort, and I will restate in my support of the revisor's bill, there are no policy changes in this bill. That is its purpose. These are grammar, punctuation, style, and form changes, and nothing more. And if you would say yes very assuredly, Ted, into that microphone, then I think we'd all feel better.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, yes, that is absolutely the intent, and that was our sole goal in fixing these things, is to fix them and not do anything else.
Thank you, Ted, and thank you, Representative Berger, for pointing that out. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I should ask the witness. I'm aware that often the Scrivener's bill contains interesting notes that may go just slightly beyond the stated point of the correction. Are there any such notes in this particular draft? Those notes that I'm referring to were intended to keep the reader awake at night while reading through the bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, we put those in there so that you would have incentive to find them and read the bill. But the fact of the matter is that we've cut down on the amount of humor that appears in the revised bill over the years, unfortunately.
So now, if I may, Mr. Chair, so now instead of being dull, it's also deadly dull.
Stunningly tedious. Is perhaps.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I would note that there's a correction on page 10 near the top. One line refers to a blue ribbon on a particular medal. The next line is removed, allows the recipient of the medal to choose a different color. And I think that's a very important thing we should note. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Further questions on this bill? Representative Holvey. Defying the odds.
Bad choice, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed that there was a lot of changes in the bill, changing everything to the word internet, and I'm curious if that's defined in statute.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. The reference that we changed in this bill was one left over from a time prior to the internet being used as widely as it is now. There are certain terms that we use in the law that just everybody knows what they mean, and I think this is probably one of those.
Further questions?
It was a trick question.
Seeing that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2148, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2148.
Chair, I move House Bill 2148 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Hoyle moves House Bill 2148 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection to the motion? Motion passes. House Bill 2148 is moved to the floor to pass recommendation. Who'd like to carry this bill?
I think the chair should carry it, Mr. Chair.
Chair will carry the bill. All right, thank you very much.
It's a punishment. Making us work a bill the first day.
Okay, close the work session on House Bill 2148, and we will now open an informational meeting on election matters, review of the 2012 general election, and overview of the 2013 legislative agenda by our Secretary of State, Kate Brown, and Steve Trout, Director of the Elections Division at that office. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Please proceed when you're ready.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. We appreciate the opportunity to be here with you this afternoon. I'm Kate Brown. I'm currently serving as the 24th Secretary of State of Oregon, the 34th if you add in the territorial Secretaries of State. And to my right is my Elections Director, Steve Trout, and we're delighted this afternoon to give you a brief recap of the 2012 election cycle and then talk briefly about some of the measures that we're going to be working on during this legislative session. My efforts as your Chief Elections Officer will continue to be proactive about ensuring the integrity of our elections process, engaging eligible Oregonians, and ensuring greater transparency in our campaign finance work, and continuing the work we've done to ensure integrity in the initiative process to make sure that when measures get to the ballot, they have done so through legal and legitimate means. So first, a recap of the 2012 election cycle. Vote by mail continues to be the primary reason why Oregon has one of the highest voter turnout rates amongst registered voters in the nation. All of the other states in the top 10 turnout have same-day voter registration. In the May primary, Oregon had a voter turnout rate of 39%. Just to give you a comparative, in Nebraska, had a primary the exact same day, and there was a hotly contested primary for the U.S. Senate race. Their turnout rate was 26%. In November, our turnout rate was 82.8%. And Washington, which is now the second state in the nation to have all vote by mail, had similar numbers. In August, their primary was about 38.48%, and November, their general election was 81.25%. That's amongst registered voters. Where we really lag behind is in voter registration. A number of Oregon organizations have worked really hard to register eligible Oregonians. The proof, in May, our voter registration rate was at 69%, and by November for the general election, we were up to 75%. Efforts that we think have been very successful include our online voter registration system. Since it was implemented in March of 2010, we've had over 240,000 Oregonians use the online voter registration system. Other organizations have had great results. I just want to highlight Oregon Student Association. Their numbers, according to their records, they registered over 50,000 students for the general elections in 2012. Another focus of our office has been to engage newly naturalized citizens. Studies have shown that there has been traditionally low participation, both registration and voting rate for newly naturalized citizens. So we've partnered with the Immigration Office and a number of immigrant advocacy groups, including Oregon Voice, CAUSA, APANO, and Center for Intercultural Organizing to register newly naturalized citizens at the time of the naturalization ceremony. It's a new project. It's called the New American Voters Project. It's been up and running since February. We've registered, engaged 90% of the newly naturalized citizens since the project started, and their voter turnout rate, we believe, is around 68% to 70%, which is astounding. I will tell you that the president of our national association, the National Association of Secretaries of State, is Ross Miller. He's a secretary from Nevada. He's going to be joining us in March and coming to watch one of the naturalization ceremonies to see the New American Voters Project in action. We would love to have you join us as well, either for that particular visit or any time that works for the committee. The naturalization ceremonies are every day, Monday through Thursday, like at 1:30, quarter to 2. So we'd love to have you come join us. I know you guys have really busy schedules. We also piloted the use of tablet technology for voters with disabilities in the first congressional special election held in November 2011 and January 2012. We were the first jurisdiction in the United States, and frankly, we believe in the world, to use this technology. We expanded the use of this technology for the 2012 election cycle. The project has been extremely successful, and I have to tell you, I think most of you know I'm not particularly technology savvy, but I do think we are at the tip of the iceberg in terms of the usability of tablet technology for enabling voters with disabilities to vote. It was also the same software that we used to deliver military and overseas ballots. Turnout for military and overseas ballots, voters was at a record 71.8%, and 19% of those ballots were returned via email. Our iPad or tablet technology is one of four nominees for our NAS award, and we're going to be presenting at the summer conference in Anchorage in July. So love to have you join us at that as well if you'd like to join us. On the difficult side, I think most of you are aware of the incidents of ballot tampering in Clackamas County. It's the first time we've seen a case like this in at least 20 years. It is absolutely unacceptable and a violation of the public trust in my mind. We will work to make sure that the accused is held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. We were very pleased to see the immediate action taken by the Oregon Department of Justice on this case. The indictment occurred within 4 weeks of the incident. I will tell you that the attorneys are keeping us apprised on the case, and there is a hearing sometime in the next couple of weeks. There's another case I thought you should be aware of. On January 23rd, a Bend man was convicted of trying to buy a ballot on Craigslist. He claimed that he posted the ad to, quote, stir up the public, and that his speech was protected by the First Amendment. A Deschutes County judge rejected this argument and convicted him of one count of unlawfully offering to purchase a ballot for money. The judge thought that offering to commit a crime is not protected speech.
okay.
Some might argue that this was a minor case and not worth prosecuting. I wholeheartedly disagree. Every voting fraud case is worth prosecuting. It sends a strong message to both wrongdoers, potential wrongdoers, as well as the public. The integrity of the voting system is my top priority as your Secretary of State. I would love to encourage you, and I know you probably won't have time during the session, to tour your county clerk's offices, particularly when there is an election taking place. Our county clerks are very dedicated and very hardworking people, and they are committed to their jobs and also ensuring the integrity of Oregon's elections systems. So that's a brief recap of 2012. As we look toward 2013, three major areas of focus for my office: greater transparency in our campaign finance system, continuing to engage more eligible Oregonians, and of course, ensuring integrity of Oregon's initiative process. On the campaign finance side, we will build on the work that we've already done regarding transparency to make sure that Oregon will continue to be one of the most transparent systems in the country. We will work to increase reporting during weeks that voters have ballots in their hands, and hoping that I can encourage you to pass legislation to enable this to happen. As we are seeing more independent expenditures, I believe that Oregonians are entitled to greater transparency, and we will be introducing legislation that will require the top five donors in independent expenditures to be named in political advertisements. On the engagement side, as your chief elections officer,
I don't think that registration should be a barrier to participation for eligible Oregonians. We have made some significant strides, but our work truly is not done. We are collaborating with a DMV, Department of Motor Vehicles, to enable an eligible Oregonians who apply for or renew their driver's licenses to be automatically registered to vote unless they decline. I have also submitted House Bill 2198, which would direct NVR agencies, National Voter Registration Act agencies, such as Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority, to share change of address information with our elections office instead of requiring clients to fill out an entirely new registration form. These efforts will reduce the barriers for participation in Oregon and increase the integrity of our elections process. We will also be moving forward with a new policy in regards to signatures on ballots in a way that ensures uniformity and accessibility for all voters. I think most of you know that right now we have a 10-day window after the election to enable voters whose signatures don't match or who haven't signed their ballots to come in and verify their signature or sign their ballot. We'd like to extend that time to 14 days until after the election and give the county elections 7 days after the election to notify those voters. But after that 7 days, that list would then become a public list so that candidates and campaigns could reach out to those voters and make sure that they get their signatures verified or their ballot signed. So that will be legislation as well, I believe, coming through the Senate. Lastly, I, of course, want to mention our work in the initiative process to continue to crack down on fraud and abuse in Oregon's initiative process. We have asked for statutory authority to provide whistleblower protections for paid circulators and require the chief petitioners to perform criminal background checks. My office currently does these criminal background checks. Frankly, we're overwhelmed in the last couple of weeks before the signature verification, and we need chief petitioners to do this work. Lest you think the issues from the initiative process are not a problem, my office fined a chief petitioner during last election cycle $65,000 for their failure to comply with Oregon's pay-per-signature law. That case is pending right now in front of an administrative law judge. So, in closing, I want to say thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. We are really excited about the great work that we are doing in elections and the great work we are going to continue to do. We are ready to answer any questions and help you with any issues that you might have. And thank you so much.
Thank you both for being here. Steve, did you have your own testimony or are you just here to back up?
I'm good to go.
All right. Thank you. I have one question to start. You referenced the Clackamas County situation. In addition to holding that person accountable, I think people are also interested in what kinds of systemic weaknesses we might have that allow that to go undetected and any kind of reviews that are underway to look into that. Can you comment on that?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Hare, for the question. We are reviewing our processes and meeting with the county clerks this week to ensure that there is uniform and consistent compliance with the security plans that all of the county clerks have in place. And frankly, there's a new Secretary of State that was elected in Washington. I met with her a couple of weeks ago to essentially cross-train and cross-compare the security measures that they have in place with the security measures that we have in place. So we will continue to make improvements. One of the improvements that we will be adding, for example, is ensuring that there are cameras in every single nook and cranny where ballots are being processed. We can pay for these cameras through our Help America Vote Act dollars. So that's a great example of the work that we can continue to do to ensure the security and the integrity of our system.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? Representative Debrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. The first has to do with the criminal background checks on initiative petition gatherers, signature gatherers. So what are the requirements now? I mean, I know that I've seen ex-offenders collecting signatures. What, are there certain crimes that bar them from being able to do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dembro, the answer is yes. The specific crimes that I recall, and I'll let Steve fill in with details, are you are prohibited from being a paid signature gatherer for a period of 5 years if you have a criminal conviction for fraud, forgery, or ID theft.
Okay. Thank you. And then my other question has to do with, you know, at the very beginning you mentioned same-day voter registration. And I know I've heard that Oregon would have problems implementing that if we were so inclined because of our vote-by-mail process. Could you talk about that? Is that the primary obstacle to us going down that road?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dembro, I think the primary obstacle to us moving to same-day voter registration is actually our Constitution and encouraging and getting Oregonians to vote to change our Constitution, which provides for a 20-day cutoff for voter registration. I will tell you that the highest state in the nation for voter turnout was Wyoming. I believe they had 104%. And they achieved that 104% because of same-day voter registration, right? They had people come in and register the day of the election. With vote by mail, it makes it technically more difficult. I do support same-day voter registration. I don't think there's any question that that engages more eligible Oregonians. Like I said, the Constitution, changing it is a hurdle, one that I would love to work with you on if we think we can get what it takes to make that happen. In the meantime, we are working on ways to use technology and, for example, matching with both outstate databases and in-state databases to make sure that we are connecting and engaging all eligible Oregonians. So thank you.
Further questions? Representative Kenemer.
Where can we go to find out the procedures you have for safeguarding and verifying vote-by-mail and email registrations? Because it's a question I keep getting from a number of my constituents. And
Mr. Chair, Representative Kenemer, I have to tell you, I think the best way for us to show you the security of both our vote-by-mail system and our online voter registration system is for us to take you to your local elections office or, frankly, for you to come in and us to walk you through the processes that we have in place. So, for example, on the online voter registration system, the only folks that are able to use the online voter registration system are folks that have a driver's license or a state ID or a permit. That's because we use the electronic signature from the Department of Motor Vehicles as a security measure. The second thing that happens when you go online to register to vote is it comes up and I says, are you a citizen of the United States of America? Are you at least 17 years of old? And are you a resident of the state of Oregon? Failure to comply with those three things, we let the voter know that it's a Class C felony subject to a $125,000 fine and several years in prison. So the penalties for violating that are very severe, and as I mentioned, we investigate and turn the prosecutions over to the Department of Justice whenever we are informed of a complaint. So in terms of the integrity of the online voter registration system, I have to tell you that the online system is as secure, if not more secure, than paper registration. Arizona's had their system up and running for over 6 or 7 years now. Their incidents of fraud have been virtually less than, the percentage is very, very small. In terms of our centralized voter registration database, we do a number of things to ensure the integrity of our centralized voter registration database. And because of vote by mail, it's really important that that centralized voter registration database is secure and up to date. That's why I work with other state agencies in the state to ensure that we have the most update information is extremely important, but also other processes that we're using, including participating in the Pew Voter Registration Modernization Project, which is essentially a database matching with Oregon and other states to ensure that we don't have voters in both states registering and voting. So we do a number of things to secure the accuracy and integrity of our centralized voter registration database. And then at the county clerk level, we require all of our county clerks to develop and submit security plans. We go through those plans. One of the more recent updates is that we had cameras in all but one of the counties. We are, as I mentioned earlier, working to make sure that there are counties and or cameras in all of the spaces where ballots are being processed. But those are some of the things. But I have to tell you, the best way we can have of showing you the integrity and the security of processes is to walk you through both one of our county clerk's offices and walk you through our system. And we're happy to do that at a time that works best for you.
Thank you.
Any further questions for our panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
5 years in jail, Class C felony. I can't remember how many years in jail. Thank you.
We appreciate your time and look
thank
forward
you
to
very much.
Hearing back from you as these issues arise.
I look forward to working with all of you. Thank you so much.
We will now close the informational meeting. And before we adjourn, I apologize that in our introductions, I neglected to ask our staff to introduce themselves. So could you please just do that for
us? Yes, I'll be happy to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Erin Seiler. This is my fifth session. Wow. And this is my first session on the House. I have staff Senate rules up until now, so I'm pleased to be here. And I am working with Zoe Lummer, and this is her first session here. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and welcome, Zoe. And Erin, it's great to have you here. Erin worked on redistricting last session and helped us navigate those tricky waters. So, seeing no further business before the committee, we will adjourn.